It's Wednesday, the 8th of July. Welcome to the BizNews Edge. I'm Alec Hogg. On today's show, I sat down with Dr. Franz Cronier, one of our top political analysts here in South Africa, for our regular catch-up, and he gave me two things worth your full attention. Why the fallout from John Steenhuisen's now infamous News 24 interview matters more than the headlines suggest, and a full-throated defense of Tony Leon that you need to hear before you believe another word about the man that you get from any quarter this week. But first, three stories that you need on your radar today, a boardroom-style battle over what flies on the flagpoles at one of the country's oldest schools. Prosus back in the bond market, riding the AI debt wave, smart move, and a JSE capital raise that tells you the exchange is working exactly as it should. Let's get into it. Well, let's kick off with that row that's got old boys and parents across the country talking. At Bishop's in Cape Town, a fight has emerged over what flies on the school's three flagpoles. And in a column that he wrote for BizNews, published today, Rob Hersov makes the case for neutrality. Just the Bishop's flag, the national flag, and the school's founding St. George's flag, he says. Nothing else. He points out that it was the Matric boys themselves in a letter to the school's executive who asked not to be divided into causes. Because what's been happening is the third of the flagpoles, where he says that the St. George's flag should be flying, has been used to promote various causes that seem to just get to the executives of the school, and who knows who chooses what. It's a glowing global trend, says Hersov, to be neutral. Over 100 universities worldwide have gone that route, from Dartmouth to Michigan, and they've adopted formally the neutrality policy. It's not about tolerance, he argues. It's about who gets to speak for an institution. Lots more to come on that story somehow. Prosus is back in the bond markets today, disclosing on SENS that it's raised $1.65 billion, dollars that is, in new dollar-denominated debt to refinance old borrowings that are maturing next year. Now, corporations do this. They tend to go into the market, make sure that they can raise money cheaper than that which they have to repay in a year's time, and whenever they can, so that they don't get stuck with a big bill at a very expensive price when it comes to either repaying the capital or rolling it over. They've been very smart, have Prosus, because it's part of a much bigger story. In fact, the lead story on the website of The Economist today, our partners in London. That story says that global tech giants are flooding bond markets at the moment with investment-grade debt. Over $400 billion worth has been raised this year from giants like Alphabet, Meta, and others of the same ilk. The Economist says that the spreads between these tech giants and the highest grade in the market, which is usually US government debt, is sitting at 25-year lows. Not surprising. They need the money to build the data centers and to accelerate the AI programs. And if the prices are low, the price of money is low, well, jump in. What matters for us here in South Africa, because Prosus is held in pretty much every retirement portfolio you can imagine in our country, is that they are riding this wave. And that can only be a bit of good news, because Prosus is not doing a speculative AI deal. It's a profitable, cash generative ecosystem play. And the ratings agencies have confirmed as much by giving the new loan, the paper, the negotiable paper that Prosus will issue in return for the $1.65 billion, an investment grade ranking. That's far better than South Africa itself is sitting at. In a market that's suddenly nervous about who will be able to repay this AI-fueled debt splurge? Process has just told investors, we can. And another story that is worth paying attention to, because it puts the doom merchants to the sword, especially those who've been talking about the JSE and the huge number of delistings and how the JSE is on a slide to oblivion. Well, HyProp, a major property group in South Africa, just gave us the best defense of the exchange that you'll probably see all year. It went to institutions yesterday asking for money, and by this morning it pulled in close to 740 million rand at a very small premium, just over 1%, to where the shares were trading yesterday. And it announced on SENS that the offer was oversubscribed. Now, that's the market saying it believes in what HyProp is doing, buying up shopping centers in Eastern Europe and then rolling out a green energy policy here at home. And sure, the share price did dip a touch in early trade on the JSE as new stock hit the register, but that's just mechanics. The real story is this. Quality companies can still raise serious capital fast on the JSE. And that's what the exchange is supposed to do. Enable companies to raise money and then provide a marketplace where those shares that are issued in return for raising the money can be traded. The exchange is working exactly as it should. Let's celebrate that for a change rather than listening to all of those who are saying the JSE is on its last legs. It certainly isn't on this evidence. Okay, let's get into today's main story. I sat down with Dr. Franz Cronier, one of our country's top analysts and a real favorite in the BizNews tribe, for a catch-up, including getting his read on the fallout from the John Steenhuisen interview. You know, that famous story where he threw everybody that he didn't like under the bus, in particular the modern DA's essential founder, Tony Leon. Going into that interview, the polls had the DA sitting very pretty, on track for a big November the 4th election in the local government when we all go to the polls there, with some hopes that they can pull in the majority in both Nelson Mandela Bay and in Johannesburg. But with all the fallout that's come from the interview of its former leader, and the fact that the former leader hasn't been kicked out and he's been given a deputy minister post, you have to wonder whether this is going to affect the DA's position. Certainly, it did appear in a previous episode of the BizNews Edge, where I spoke to Dr. Corne Mulder, the leader of the Freedom Front Plus, that although he was quite reserved on what he thought about the DA's, the impact on the DA, he certainly wasn't uncomfortable about how it would impact the Freedom Front Plus. So what about this, Franz Cronier? You can also hear his view on Tony Leon. And as mentioned in the intro, it's rather positive. But let's start off with my question of, so how much damage has Steenhuisen done to his old party?
He took the DA up to these highs. Actually puts pressure on his successor now, because he took it to very high numbers. And the best way to think about the answer to your question is to just go again back a little bit. What is going on in the country at the moment? And what's going on is that South Africa is going through a period of regime change, in the nicest sense, not a pejorative sense. And regime change is a two-step process. And step one, it's always the same, doesn't matter where in the world. Step one is that the society loses confidence, loses the belief, in fact, that the old regime can protect its interests. And that has substantively occurred with the ANC. People have lost confidence. Hence, it's at 40% or wherever it is now. But there's step two, and the people must come to believe, the society must believe that the new regime will protect their interests. And that was very much the DA's challenge. And because step one has happened and step two hasn't really happened to the same extent, we sit in this no man's land where we are at the moment, where the ANC has let's say 40% and the DA has let's say 25%. And the only way we're going to get away from that, if we do, we might not, is either for the ANC to redevelop the belief that it once commanded, or for the DA to do that. And for the DA to do that, it has to demonstrate that in government, it is very effective, much more so than the ANC has been. And that hasn't been clear in the cabinet. You know, I mean, John's own performance wasn't good as minister. People were frustrated at him, and this foot and mouth thing was badly handled. And in the education ministry, another example, you've got a DA minister, and it's not good what's going on there. It's a mess, and it's you could argue it's making education worse than it was before, which is staggering to think it could even be possible. And then you get you know, an example like the communications minister who's trying, sort of trapped between things to a certain extent. You get the McPherson chap who's doing quite well in some respects in fighting off corruption in government buildings. You get Leon Schreiber at Home Affairs, who, you know, yeah, there's progress, but visit a Home Affairs office, as someone I know recently did. Oh boy, the thing is, if you're the ANC now, you know you can't reform with your current leader. I mean, reform in the sense of get growth back, because the chap's not a reformer. And you're losing support to the DA. So one of your options is stop losing support. And you can either do that by making yourself better or making the DA look as bad as you. And the challenge the DA therefore faces now on the numbers, and where John had them going, but now it has to be taken further, is to demonstrate that you can govern better. And that hasn't been demonstrated. No, not at the scale to move the dial politically to the extent that the DA might wish it to be moved. And so we are stuck in this middle ground. And a point that's been made to the DA is, when they think about how to do that, they might think this way, that they're not competing with the ANC anymore only. Well, they are, but not really. They're actually competing with something else, which is the enclave future, where South Africans who get fed up with politicians, as politicians sometimes get fed up with analysts, those South Africans think, you know what, all the politicians are more or less useless, some more than others, some less. We're actually just going to get on with it ourselves, and I'll have my own solar panels and my own water tank, and I'll join the neighborhood watch, and we'll beat the criminals to death in the streets, or whatever one does. And if the DA cannot demonstrate that it governs significantly better than the ANC can, then that is where the country will go, towards more self-reliance in communities. And I think that's already happening to a significant degree. And that competitor is perhaps the more competitive competitor that the DA has to face than its adversary in the ANC.
Tony Leon?
Tony Leon, I think, is, and unless there's something I don't know, which is very unlikely, is a most decent and good and upstanding person. And I don't know much about his business, Resolve Communications, except that my impression, and I've asked around, is exactly the same. And Alec, a young journalist called me, it was very nice, and said to me, would I comment on the allegations against Tony Leon and his firm? And I asked what those allegations were. And this person said to me, well, that he'd used his political influence to meet with cabinet ministers. And I said, okay, well, that sounds fine to me. I mean, that's pretty normal. I don't understand why that's an allegation. I mean, he runs a business that advises investors about how to talk to the government and how to talk to investors. That's a normal thing. And this person then said to me, well, where do I draw the line between what would be a legitimate sort of action and something illegitimate? And I said, well, if he'd committed a crime, I mean, it's obvious. If he'd said, give me money to make this decision or send my firm a backhander, that's easy. What has gone wrong with the world that we don't understand the difference between right and wrong anymore? It's obvious where the line exists. If you've committed a crime, then you should be prosecuted. And I said to this person, you know, surely there are a lot of examples you could write about where political actors have committed a crime in seeking to influence the minister. Why is your entire industry writing about Tony Leon as if he's committed a crime, a state capture and the like? I said, state capture wasn't the Gupta family offering advice to the minister. It was the Gupta family bribing the minister. There's a category difference here. And I don't see the allegation was made he drafted questions for a member of parliament. Well, the Institute of Race Relations used to draft Helen Suzman's questions in parliament. I mean, this is normal. If you're an expert, you'd say to the minister, here's an idea. You can ask the president, or the president, or someone can ask the minister. This is normal. The minister's not compelled to do that. They can take whatever advice they wish to take. It's normal behavior. And then the point is made, well, the ministers were put under pressure. Well, the poor little darlings. I hope they were put under pressure by investors. And in fact, had they been put under greater pressure, the economy might be growing faster than 1%. And in an editorial recently, this media thing I work on wrote, where do people think ministers get their ideas from? Do they think they come from heaven, untouched by human thought and influence? Of course they don't. They come from the cut and thrust of ideas, the battle of ideas. There are activists that push ideas and journalists that push ideas. When private investors wish to push ideas, they often consult lobbying firms, because the lobbying firms can advise them how to deal with this government, what the minister is like, what would likely motivate the politics, what the correct means to do this is. You can't just fly into a society you don't understand and start telling the minister what to do. You seek out an expert like Tony Leon. And Tony will tell you. Look, I imagine Tony would tell you. I don't actually, as I understand it, you'd say, listen, this is how the politics works. These are the internal pressures. You must be sensitive about this. You don't have to be worried about that. And this would be an approach that the minister might be willing to listen to. I think that's very good. I actually think it's very important. It's a conduit between private investors and the state, a professional services conduit. And I would imagine that one run by someone like Tony Leon would have at the center of its work the best interests of the country and the society around it. So as I see it, absolutely disgraceful that suggestions to the contrary would be made about Tony Leon without any proof that a crime, or at least a great ethical, I mean, let's say even short of a crime, let's say there'd been a great ethical, moral failure here, that would also be a bad thing. No evidence of that has been presented.
That brings you back to Steenhuisen's allegations and what motivated him. Was it just the politician who got terribly emotional and said, I'm going to strike back? Or was he put up to it? Is he dim? I mean, those are the questions, the obvious questions to ask. I hear what you say about Tony Leon, and if you're right, then you have to question where the instigation came from, I guess.
Well, I'm a bit out of my depth because I don't know much about Tony's firm. I know a little bit about the campaign that Steenhuisen referred to. What that was, as I understand it, and I can be corrected, but I think my understanding is good enough to say this, that a group of investors, business people who run businesses, who were very frustrated at the vaccine policy because they were suffering catastrophic losses that were terrible and knew that it could be done better, would likely have approached Tony's firm to say, help us talk to the minister about this. And that's what was done. And again, as in all these things, I think that's exactly the way to do it. I mean, if you're some kind of a, let's take another example, if you're a coal miner and you're really good at coal mining, you don't actually know how to go and talk to a cabinet minister. How do you do it? So you talk to a professional who knows. Says, oh, this is how we do it. This is the right way, and we'll help you do that. It's a similar thing, and I think John loses his job on account of the fact that the vaccine response is wrong-headed. Two things come together, I imagine.
Okay, so let's get to the so what. Two threads, one lesson. France's regime change theory tells you why the DA can't just coast on Steenhuisen's early wins. It has to prove itself better than the ANC, in Johannesburg most of all, or the country drifts further into the enclave economy that we've spoken about on BizNews many times, and indeed where our favorite financial advisor, Magnus Haystack, has been telling us that it's the one place you really can put your money into if you're considering property in South Africa. Seems like the institutions are quite happy to put that into high prop as well, but it really just reinforces that whole enclave theory. And on the Tony Leon episode, what Franz says tells you something just as important for investors. There's a world of difference between lobbying, which is how every functioning economy connects capital to policy, and state capture, which is bribery. And it's about time that people in South Africa actually understood the difference there. There's nobody that I've heard who can point a finger at Tony Leon and give evidence of bribery, but they are conflating the perception that if you speak to someone, you necessarily are going to make them see things your way. An intelligent human being listens to all sides of the argument. Tony Leon is simply, from what Franz is saying, giving the opportunity to these politicians to listen to the side of the argument from his clients. And that's his business. Well, if that distinction gets blurred in the public mind, legitimate business voices will go quiet exactly when the country needs them to be the loudest. You might recall what's happened in the past week is our deputy president, Paul Mashatile, jetted off to Dubai and signed a deal which no rational mind can say is a better one than the Starlink deal. It's a satellite option which is slower and far more expensive than Starlink, but it does qualify for BEE. So some people are going to benefit, and those people who are going to benefit, if the track record is anything to go by, are going to be the politically connected. The full interview with Franz Cronier is on the Director's Cut, and that's available for members on biznews.com or BizNews TV on YouTube. Watch for two things from here, whether the DA can actually govern Johannesburg if it wins it, because France is right, the city has to become the DA's advertisement for the whole country. Its template. Helen Ziller told me some years back that the whole idea of running Cape Town was to make that the template for the rest of the country. Well, so far, so good. But if they can get Joburg as well, it will certainly send out a very strong message. And everything in the DA now appears to be targeting on being the biggest party in the country in 2029. And watch tomorrow's show as well, this BizNews Edge, where the anchor interview features Education Minister and former DA spokesperson, Siviwe Gwarubi. And after what France told us today about her ministry, i.e. it's in a mess, I've got some pointed questions for her. Well, that's the BizNews Edge for today. Thank you for your time. It's always our most valuable commodity to have you with us. For more on all these stories, please head over to biznews.com. I'm Alec Hogg. Until tomorrow, cheerio. In uncertain times, good information is priceless. The BizNews Conference is heading back to the Drakensberg. Join me, Alec Hogg, from the 11th to the 14th of August for BNC 9, Champagne Sports Resort, where it all began and where our community gathers for honest conversations, smart investing insights, and direct access to some of South Africa's sharpest minds. Come and rub shoulders with the best we've got. 28 keynote speakers, 3 days. Seats are available now. Book your seat by clicking the link in the description. Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox. Sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now.